This episode of The Good Chat contains references to sexual assault, mental health, and drug addiction. If you or anyone you know needs help, contact Lifeline on 131114 or the Sexual Assault and Domestic Violence National Helpline on 1800 RESPECT. I'm Anita Annabelle, and this is The Good Chat.
No, do you not like compliments?
Quietly, I'm loving it.
I love making friends. I don't know what to tell you.
I'm a psychic. This podcast is going to be a hit.
Little chit chat.
This is probably the best chat. No, that's why this is called The Good Chat. We get good chat, mate.
Hello and welcome to another episode of The Good Chat. I am your host, Anita Annabelle. I am so excited about this week's chat. I chatted to Sippy, who is a phenomenal DJ and also an incredible human being. Sippy is a Sydney-born bass music machine, and anyone who spent time on the Australian bass music circuit knows her name. She's built her career blasting her signature gut-rattling Caesar-inducing sounds through the sound system of her country's famous clubs and festivals. Now she's in LA touring with the best of them, including releasing a track with Marshmello. Now, Sippy and I met at F45 when she was a trainer during COVID and is the most down-to-earth person you will ever meet. But when she's on the decks, she's an absolute powerhouse. We talked about her rise to fame, how she became a DJ, and what it's like being a woman in a male-dominated field. So, without further ado, here's Sippy. So you are this insanely cool DJ. I like to call you DJ Sippy, but you're just Sippy.
Yeah.
I know that. But I love that. Calling you DJ Sippy. I don't know. I like to overcomplicate things. But let's talk about your DJ life, because I think you are the most down-to-earth chick. And I know you and I've had this conversation before. I think you're so down-to-earth and you're so cool. And then I remember you showing me the music that you do. And I was like, what the fuck? You're like the most normal human, and then you do this full-on bass music, like banging your head. It's like full, like crazy.
It's so intense.
And I was like, who are you?
I know, I love it, because like people are like, oh my God, like you write music, you're a DJ. They're like, let me hear it. And I'm like, no. You don't want to hear it. I know the music you like. I can choose music that you would like. It's just not mine.
And here I am like dancing to like 80s music in the 45 gym, and you're not going to like my music.
No.
And I looked at it and watched you, and I was like, head banging and the strobe lights and all.
It's a lot.
So how did you get into this scene? Because it is such a rando scene to get into.
Yeah, it's really random. I think like, so when I started, I mean, I was always into music at school, but never this kind of thing, not even really electronic music so much. And then I wanted to kind of like get into producing music, but I was at uni studying health sciences, like completely different. But I missed like playing and writing music from high school. So I wanted to like produce music just for my own like fun. And I actually entered a DJ competition called Your Shot, which is like essentially like you go in with no experience and then they bring you into the competition. They actually teach you how to DJ.
Yeah.
And so I was like, all right, this is a good place to start. It'll help me learn how to like produce music and write music. So went into that. And essentially like when I started, I was a bit like, I don't really know what music I want to DJ. So I just kind of went through all the genres of music. And I eventually hit dubstep, which is like essentially like the major part of the bass music that I write. And I don't know, the thing that I loved about it was just so like, it was kind of like really shocking and unexpected. Mm. And the thing that I loved about it for me is like people wouldn't expect that coming from me either. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Like I loved being a walking anomaly where it was kind of like, here is this like super nice, chill chick who like, and they don't expect me to be like playing that sort of stuff. So that, I mean, I enjoyed the music in itself more than anything, but like in terms of all of that side of things, like I really enjoyed that. And I think as I was coming up as a DJ, like I was told by people like, yeah, well, usually dubstep DJs like act like this, they wear this, you know, I mean, let's be honest, most of them are guys, everyone wears I mean, this is, I'm going into putting the stereotype, but most of them are guys. They all wear black. Yeah. They all party really hard and like drugs, alcohol, like the whole fucking thing. And, you know, there's definitely certain like branding undertones that they all use. And at first I was like, okay, well, that's not really like me. And that, like, as great as that is, like, that's not really like how I am really. And then after a while, I was just like, fuck it, just do you, be you in this context. Like, you're allowed to, who says that only those people can enjoy it? Who says that only those people can be good at it? You know, like, there's a lot of other people out there who like a lot of different things. Like, I remember really early on being told by like a manager, being like, obviously, like, not my manager now, like an old manager, who was like, oh, like, you shouldn't brand and market this part of yourself. Like, I've always been really into sport and exercise and health, and just for myself. And so like that was starting to become a big thing for me, and it would pop up on like my socials a little bit. And they were like, don't promote that, because other people who are into like music like yours aren't really into that. And I remember at the time being like, well, I don't know, so what? Like, I don't, first of all, I don't believe that. And second of all, like, I want to be, this is who I am and this is what I want to be. And sure enough, like, that ended up in like sponsorships with Nike and like so many things that like were so relevant, and so many people who were like, hey, I listen to your music in the gym, which is like, you know, a lot of people listen to that kind of heavy stuff in the gym. So I don't know, a lot of it was like getting into this music was like not necessarily, on the one hand, it was just because of what I liked, but on the other hand, like, I definitely did play into the whole like the whole fact that it was like almost completely opposite to like my personality as well.
And that's exactly why when I met you, I was so shocked that you did this. But I mean, I look at a DJ scene and I'm such a pop girl. Like, I love the Backstreet Boys. I love NSYNC. Yeah. I love Christina Aguilera. I'm currently listening to the Divas, like Mariah Carey and Whitney Houston. Like,
I love that.
Could it be any more opposite to what you do? However, you did touch on a point that I wanted to talk about, and that is, this is such a male dominated industry and you are fucking killing it.
Yeah.
What is that like, being a woman in such a male-dominated industry?
I mean, there's positives and negatives. Like, I think a lot of people obviously focus on the negatives when they talk about these things, because they're obviously the boundaries that can kind of limit women from getting into this industry or even like succeeding in it. But I mean, like, there's kind of two sides of it. Like, the one side that's a positive is, like, as you were kind of, well, like, kind of briefly were touching on, is, like, you know, you don't expect to see someone like me doing this kind of music. So, like, that usually works to my favor, because I'm a lot more memorable. It's like, oh, like, remember that one girl. And, like, that usually is a positive. It can be a negative, because you do have to be really careful. Like, you have to sort of be better, because the second you make a mistake, they're going to remember you. You know what I mean? Whereas like, sometimes
you're like, I've always got a target on your head.
Exactly. But like, on the one hand, like, it is great in terms of you are a little bit more memorable, you can stand out a little bit more branding wise there's like a few things that kind of come a little bit more naturally. So there's definitely positives in that sense, and there are some opportunities, like, I know now that I do get. And I don't know, I guess this is kind of seen as a bit of a negative, because I know that there are some people that give out opportunities because they want to be seen as, oh, I'm supporting women, so here, have this opportunity. So on the one hand, yes, you can complain that it's a little bit like tokenism and they're just trying to like look good. But on the other hand, I'm like, hey, here's an opportunity for me to convert. Sure, like, I may be getting it because you're just trying to look good by supporting women, but on the other side of things, I'm like, well, this is giving me an opportunity to show you and prove yourself, like, and prove myself and show you why I deserve these opportunities.
Yeah.
But then the other side of it that's tough is, you know, already in my career, there have been so many different stages of it, and things change as you progress into different levels of the industry. So like, I don't know, one side of it is being taken seriously. You know, it's sometimes hard to be taken seriously, or people kind of stereotype you as like, oh, okay, you're a woman, so you're not as good at these things. Or if you make a mistake, they instantly say like, oh, well, you know, like, they kind of I don't know, they point those things out more often. They try and find flaws in what you're doing. They're trying to say, oh, you didn't really write that. You didn't really do that yourself. You had help. Like,
no
that,
way.
Yeah, that's a really common one, actually, which it's funny because when I was sort of earlier in my career, I did so many things to prove those people wrong. But now I'm like, that's not even how I want to, like, I would be doing things DJing. I would make it so complicated to prove to people how, you know, how good I was at what I did. But I'm like, I don't even really want to mix like that. I'm just doing it to prove a point. Now
it's so disappointing for you because you're like, why can't, then you're not being true to who you are.
Exactly. Like it's a hard balance. And I think sometimes I have had to do more to prove myself in that sense. And then there's also another side of things where like, I mean, I don't even know how to like communicate this as much, but like, you know, there's quite often where you'll be in a social scenario or like you'll be in a scenario with DJing and, you know, quite often there is that sort of sexual harassment. There's some, it can go as shallow or as deep as you want, you know, it can go from something as simple as, oh, you think that someone's actually interested in working with you, but then you realize their intentions are really not that they want to work with you. But it also can go a lot deeper into like emotional harassment and abuse, down into sexual harassment and abuse. Like when you think about this, you know, this industry, it's very unregulated. You know, we don't go into an office. There's no HR. It's all based on, you know, anyone that gets picked up by HR would be like people who get cancelled on social media because they've already done all these things to so many people and they've finally been outed for it. So it's kind of, it can be kind of messy and that sort of stuff. And as a woman, I think there's a little bit more to navigate in that scene in terms of as you're coming up. And mentally, I think you have to be a lot tougher to get through that stuff. You have to not take things too personally and really see it for what it is. And sometimes, I mean, there were years of burden that I was like, fuck, this is hard and this is tough. But in saying that, like, I think it's set me up better. Like now that I've gotten through a lot of that, it set me up better for the future, if that makes sense.
Was there a specific time when you had somebody, without naming names, that did kind of harass you in that way? Is this from personal experience?
Yeah. Like multiple, like, it's funny because there are blurred lines because on the one side of things, when I see, say, for example, other producers who want to work with me in a music sense, and, you know, I start working with them, but then I realize that the reason they want to work with me is more because they're romantically interested in me rather than, you know, they want to work with me in a work sense. And yes, whilst that's not ideal and not, you know, like you would rather not, sometimes people don't necessarily understand that's really where it's coming from. And look, I'm not here to say, oh, you can't approach, you know, you can't, I don't know, how do I even say this? Like, I'm not one to say you're not allowed to be romantically into anyone. Obviously there's a way to go about it, you know, let someone know and everyone's got their boundaries and communicate that sort of thing. It's frustrating that people don't communicate that. And then suddenly you're, you know, three sessions into something and you realize, well, fuck, this person didn't really want to work with me at all. And obviously that creates issues in your own, you know, you
personal
go
life, yeah.
Yeah, you go, does anyone really want to work with me or is it just because of this, that and the other? But there have been times in like more structured environments with managers and such that have been like pretty full on. And I think I was at an age and a point in my career where I believed the whole you need me, like coming from them, I believed more of you need me, you need this opportunity. No one's going to take you seriously. No one's going to listen to you. I can do all that for you. And I was quite young and naive and went, yeah, and put up with shit for a long time because of that. Now that I have kind of come through that, I definitely make sure if I ever see, I especially like look out for young women or inexperienced women as they're going through, I mean, not just them, but I keep a close eye on those ones that I know, if I see them kind of crossing into paths that I know are dangerous, like I do reach out to them, purely because it did happen to me, and it may not happen to them, but I just remember one time not mentioning anything and feeling so horrible about it. So from then I'm like, hey, if you mention something and nothing happens, that's still the ideal situation. It's messy. It's definitely, there's a lot in there for sure.
In this day and age, it does scare me that there's so much of this that still goes on. I mean, I had a very horrible experience with someone who's in the media. He's on radio, and he sexually assaulted me when I was 23, 24. And because of who he was, I was like, I can't say anything. And then I still stayed friends with him. And I was like, well, I can't say anything, because if I want a career in media, if I say something, this is going to come back to haunt me.
Yeah.
And it's like, if you say something, it's going to come back to haunt you.
It's still and very much a thing.
I've never, ever said anything. The only time I've ever said anything about it was writing it in a story, and we just didn't mention where he was from, what he did, all that kind of stuff. But yeah. I wish I had said something. And age, with hindsight, you look back and you go, why didn't I say something? Mm. What he did to me was so unfair and inappropriate and violating, and I thought, because of what the industry he was in, I wasn't going to do anything, and I didn't want to say anything for my own career, and that is so disturbing.
Yeah,
and you're feeling the same way.
Yeah, it's such a hard line, because I feel exactly the same. I feel like, okay, well, I don't want to be the person to say something, because I actually, as much as everyone goes, oh, your career won't suffer because of that, if you say something. As much as I want to believe that, that's actually not where we are. We're not there yet. And I would love for us to be there, but we're not. But the thing that I did do, or that I have been doing, is, anytime that I see, I guess I've kind of been going about it in a different way, because, anyone who has heard the story or whatever go, oh, you should just like jump on social media and cancel that person, all this shit. And that's not really like, how I would. It's not helpful. I think, that sort of thing also is messy, because there are some people who get caught in crossfire of that who haven't necessarily done something wrong. It's just people think that because they're behind their phones, there's no consequence, so they could say stuff that's not true. But in saying that, like, I have definitely, like I said, any women that I see who are getting themselves in a similar scenario or associating with those people, like, I always just go, hey, you want to go for a coffee, tell them about my experience and the other women's experiences, and say, up to you with what you do with that information, no judgment at all, but I'm just letting you know about this so that you're going in fully aware. And then also with people that might be like working with those people as well, the teams, if anything, like the people who do that, if you do it in that way, people make the choice on their own not to associate and work with those kinds of people.
Yeah.
So say, for example, there have been a few times where I had that certain experience, and people would talk to me about working with those people, and I was like, hey, like, cool. Yeah. Like, this was my experience working there. And then I don't ever say like, don't work with them, do work with them. But obviously, like, you just say, once you know about it, yeah, they make their own decisions. And especially with people like that, where it hasn't happened once, where I'm not the first person to like, tell them a story like that, it's definitely a lot easier for people to make their decisions and choose to work.
How do you differentiate between a person who you can trust and who you can't in that industry? I mean, I want to just say, like, we know that this is not specific to this industry. This is something that's specific to this is something that happens in a lot of industries. But definitely, I'm really curious about, in your specific industry, how do you know now, looking back, going, okay, well, I wouldn't put myself in that situation now. How do you do that now?
Well, it's interesting, because this was something I was going to mention before about being one of the positives of being like a female in this industry. One of the good things is I feel like you can kind of filter out the dickheads really quickly because they show their true colors straight away. Like, you don't get me wrong, I've had times where I've walked into a room and the guy who's whatever thinks he, well, not thinks he is, but, you know, in whatever position, sometimes he'll go around and shake everyone's hand and he'll skip me because I'm the only female there and he just assumes I'm someone's girlfriend or whatever it is. I've had moments like that, and straight away, like, it tells me what I need to know, you know, like, okay, this guy is, you know, like, it definitely tells me, I don't know, it definitely tells me a part of character in that sense.
So it's literally you're the talent and they're walking straight past you.
No, not well. I mean, that doesn't happen as much now because the shows that I play, I definitely played some shows back back a few years ago where I was just on the bill with people and people would come up to me telling me about how much they're killing it because they're playing next. And meanwhile, and not realizing, like, I'm the headliner and going, cool, man, sounds great. Have a good set.
Like, good for you, mate. I am headlining and that's why everyone's here. So.
But yeah, it's definitely a good filter because I think, you know, the way that some people would treat me, especially when other people aren't watching, is really, you know, it's a good indication. But also it kind of, like, it's definitely very much a word of mouth, I think, in my sort of side of the industry. And, you know, like, working out and also seeing who works, like, the people that work with these people, you know, like, when you're like, oh, okay, like, this person who I trust that I know really well works closely with that person, you might call them and be like, hey, you know, tell me a little bit about this person, how it's been working with them, that sort of thing. Obviously, like, it's not foolproof, you never know, but that's the same with anything really in life. But it's definitely, like, a good way to work out, you know, who you should work, you know, like, who you should work with, what their reputation is like. I think also in my industry, the reputation is a little bit more all-encompassing because it's not necessarily like, oh, this is what I'm like at work, because it is a little bit mixed. It's a little bit like, okay, we're working, but we're at a festival. And something is, you know, as much as this is blurred and a lot of people couldn't really imagine it, but when we go to work, if you're at a club or at an event, like, there's no rule saying you can't drink. There's no rule saying you can't do drugs. There's no rule saying you can't go to the after party, you know? So also seeing how people conduct themselves in all of those different settings definitely gives you a better insight into who they are and how they conduct themselves. And as much as you should think that it's irrelevant, sometimes it is, you know, sometimes people who are incredible managers also can't switch off when to party and when not to, you know, but but in saying that, like, usually it's, you can sort of see, you know, a lot more into how someone is and how they kind of conduct themselves in a lot of different settings as well.
And so there's such a big drug culture, which you touched on, in that industry. And how do you manage to stay away if that's something that you don't want to do yourself? Because I can imagine that that's really what a lot of people just do.
Yeah, I actually, like, I definitely see a lot of, especially, like, young guys that I see get into this industry and they get a lot of success really quickly and then they kind of, like, go down that rabbit hole and I see them and it's hard because it's a little bit heartbreaking because you can see that they don't really have the awareness of the spiral that they're kind of going down. For me, I think I was never, you know, I was never really a big drug taker anyway. I'm not a big risk taker either, and I think that's where a lot of that came from as well. But I think for me, like, I took this so seriously as a job from quite early on that, yes, even though I'm, like, super fun, energetic, excitable, I'm a big goofball, I love to play around, in saying that, like, I also want to go to bed so I can wake up early so I can write music, because I think I realized how much work it takes to make this work. I think people see DJs and they're like, oh, that's awesome, like, you get to, like, play a show and get paid a lot of money and fly around the country and that's it. But you have to be writing music all day every day, you have to be running your own business, you've got multiple people working for you that you have to manage, talk to, like, get them all tapped into where you are, you have to write the music, you have to do social media, you have to be personable every time you go out and see all of these different people, whether they be, you know, promoters, whether they be fans, like, whoever they are. So I think for me, I just kind of took the work a lot more seriously, which meant I was like, I can't afford to be wrecked tomorrow because I have to work, or I can't afford to be wrecked tomorrow because I need to have a Sunday. I mean, not that it was ever a Sunday, but, like, when you're DJing on the weekends, you're working Monday to Friday on music, you're DJing and traveling Saturday, Sunday. And so it's like, well, I need to have a day to rest so that I can get back into it the next day.
And I mean, this is your career.
So exactly.
It's, you know, that makes a lot of sense why you'd take it seriously. This is how you make your income. This is how you,
exactly.
you get known. And this is why you're so successful at such a young age.
And also the other thing is too, there's no boss telling you to show up for work. So you could spend 3 days in bed watching Netflix doing nothing. And that's totally fine. You're not going to get in trouble for it.
Yeah.
But you're not going to be able to pay your bill next month.
You
know? So it's kind of, and I think for me, you know, yes, I do have times where I'm like, okay, this opportunity or like this show or this event is my opportunity to like have a couple of drinks and have a good time. But for the most part, it's like if I think it's better to sort of say no to that sort of stuff because for the most part, it's more consistent.
Mm.
Because otherwise, like it can become a complete mess. And also being a woman on my own, you know, traveling to other parts of the world, there is, you know, I have to be
risk.
Careful. There's definitely risk and you have to make sure you're looking after yourself. So if you're too far gone, you know, like, and you're in a different city in the world, you know, like there's not anyone else to kind of necessarily look after you in that sense.
And it's so scary because you have major DJs from all types of music, you know, like Avicii, for instance, who had an overdose.
Yeah.
And, you know, and he maybe didn't have people to, they were probably enabling him. They probably weren't helping him to go, this is a really big drug culture. We see you have a problem. Let's stop this.
Yeah.
And that's the really scary part is when you get so big like that and you have people who just let you do whatever the hell you want.
Mm-hmm.
There's no form of, I mean, I don't know the backstory, obviously,
mm-hmm.
And who knows how that all transpired. But if you don't have people saying, this is not good for you, you need to stop, this is your career, you're going to ruin it, or worse, death,
yeah,
then that's it for you. And that, and it's so sad because Avicii was so talented and
so young too.
And so young.
Yeah.
And had the world at his feet.
It's really hard because I think also too, like when it comes to, like when you think about it as an artist, as a musician, you spend a lot of time alone. You either spend a lot of time alone or you spend a lot of time surrounded by hundreds of thousands of people that you don't know. And it's every night. Every night you're put in front of thousands of people that you don't know and then you spend the rest of your time on your own.
Mm.
And there's definitely a lot of it's definitely a perfect cocktail of some negative mental health. And I think a lot of the manager's job is meant to be, you know, work and like this is the best decision for your career. But what I don't think a lot of managers have the foresight of is it's not as black and white of, okay, here's the career and here's the work, because that's all coming from one person. And I think a lot of managers don't have the foresight to be like, okay, this person is just like at the moment they're just functioning to survive.
Yeah.
But the problem is that's all going to come crashing down. And say, for example, with Avicii, I don't think, you know, I don't think his management made decisions that were in the interest of his well-being.
Mm-hmm.
And I think sometimes, you know, management as much as, or I mean, I'm not saying that this has to be management's role. Maybe you have to bring on someone else to do this, but they need to keep in mind their artist's well-being. Yes, you might make more money by forcing them to do, you know, six shows in 3 days. But the load
but
how that
is he going to do that?
Yeah,
exactly.
The load that takes on that artist means that, you know, they get themselves into these spirals of anxiety, of depression, and then they have to take certain drugs to pull them out of that because they've got to perform and they've got to get there, and it's really like a disastrous combination.
And then it does the cycle.
Exactly. And it's very short term. Like I think, you know, looking at the artists that I know who do really well for, you know, like over a long period of time, are usually the ones that stop and take care of themselves and are aware of those sorts of things. I think we're still like a little bit in the whole rock star mentality of like, you know, just like doing drugs and partying and all that sort of stuff nonstop. But we're in a bit of a different day and age. You can perform a lot more shows in a lot less time now with the way that everything is, with the way that technology is.
And reach a larger audience.
Exactly. So I think there needs to be, I mean, for the safety and well-being of artists, like I think these things need to be thought about, and also like they need the support. And that's what I think they don't often get, because from this position, you know, you get a lot of judgment, a lot of negativity. There's a lot of people telling you, you know, what you're doing. As much as there's people who do like and appreciate what you do, there's plenty of people who speak negatively on it. And you're also making decisions, as many decisions as you can for yourself.
Yeah.
But you also have those managers and agents out there trying to make decisions for you, and a lot of it is for them to capitalize and make money. So it is definitely an awkward balance between all of those things.
It's so funny talking about all these negatives, and I know there are so many positives as well, but it's funny talking about the negatives because you look at your life and you look at your life on Instagram and you go, God, what a life.
Yeah.
Just going out, making people happy,
yeah,
partying, it's, DJing.
Yeah,
what,
it's
but
funny
it's hard work, right?
It's definitely like it always looks good. Everyone sees how it looks good. And there's one part that I don't like about, I mean, I'm on socials in terms of like with all of this, I'm very active on socials in that sense. But I actually don't really enjoy social media for the most part. I enjoy just like living in the moment and being in real life. But it's interesting because everything will obviously, like most people on social media are going to portray the best parts of everything. And it's always going to look amazing. And people, and especially artists, really shy away from talking about the negative aspects, especially because one of the most common things is as soon as you say anything like that, everyone will shoot you down for it. Oh, you know, it's, what are you talking about? You're traveling the world and you're playing music and it's all like, you can't complain. And like anything, you know, like there are pros and cons to everything. And this job is incredible. Like there are so many incredible things that come out of it. But it's also really hard work.
Yeah.
It definitely takes a lot of guts and there's a lot of pressure that comes through with it. You know, like as great as it is to like be able to, you know, you don't have to show up for your boss, it also means that there is a risk of not paying your rent next month or, you know, like as amazing
COVID
as
COVID hits.
Or COVID hits and you spend a year and a half not making a cent and people shoot you down for putting a, I don't know, like a donation link on your Spotify, you know, like, oh, well, you know, people shoot you down straight away going, oh, well, what do you mean? You're a big DJ. And it's like, I'm a big DJ that doesn't make a cent for a year and a half, you know. It's definitely, yeah, it's, I mean, there are obviously so many positives to it. It's an amazing feeling and it's great, but it's definitely hard work and it's a big risk. Like even for myself, I've moved over to another country by myself and I am so homesick. I miss my family. I miss my friends and I can't go back home. I can't go back home right now. The way that my visa is, I actually can't leave the US right now. And for most of the time I've been here, no one in Australia has been able to come visit me. So
no.
That's definitely a big sacrifice. You know, there's sacrifices for everything, but there's definitely a lot of that comes with it.
And in a positive way though, and I was so shook when I heard this because I was like, this is one DJ that I know. It's not Whitney Houston. No, when you told me you were going to, when you had a collab. What is wrong with me?
Collab.
Collab. That you collaborated with Marshmallow.
Yes.
I mean, hello, what the hell?
I know. I even
that
when
is a
it,
career highlight.
I know.
Purple strobe
even
lighting,
when it,
honey.
I know. Even when it happened, not that I should say this, but I was like, who was asleep on the job and let this happen? No, I've been friends with him for years. I think I must have been producing when I first, I don't know, if, I think I was producing when I first met him, but like years I've been friends with him. And anytime he came to Australia, I was just always, like, I would show him around, you know, we'd hang out, whatever it was. And even his friends, like, as soon as his friends came to tour Oz, like, I would straight away be like, yep, let's hang out. This was, I met him before he was doing huge. The Marshmallow Project and all of that sort of stuff. So I obviously didn't know when I met him how big that whole thing would happen for him. But I never once really pushed for us to work together, because obviously he was on this big machine of Marshmallow and doing his thing. And I was slowly learning and getting better. And I definitely wasn't in a place where I could, you know, collaborate with him. My ability wasn't quite there yet. But, you know, eventually it did get there. But again, like, I never really like to push that on people, because I like it to be organic. If they're like, yep, this feels right and I want to do it, then that it always works out better that way. And yeah, he just kind of FaceTimed me out of the blue during COVID, being like, I'm working on this album. And like, I was just wanted to see if you had anything, if you're interested in collaborating. And, you know, I was like, I'm too busy for you. And
I'm too busy for you, Marshmallow.
I'm too busy, sorry.
No, sorry, you're like one of the most famous DJs in the world, and I'm too busy for you right
too busy,
now.
So. Too busy, yeah.
Too busy and important.
Yeah, so he just called me and asked, and I was like, of course, I'd love to, and sent him an idea. And I think I almost didn't really think about it, because I don't know, even though we'd written the track and we finished it, I just kind of assumed that, I'm not assumed it wouldn't happen. I just hadn't heard much about it and was like, you know, just, you've done the work that you need to do. And just like, you know, if he puts it out and puts on the album, that's awesome. And then, yeah, literally got the email from his team being like, okay, we're finalizing the release and all that sort of stuff. So that was a really awesome, incredible experience for me. I think, like, obviously on the one part, like, for the music and having that music out and writing a track with him, but also just for myself, for being like, okay, this is now where you're at in your career, and you can get an opportunity like this and really do well at it and convert it. And yeah, it was really fun. And especially like seeing how decisions that I made, you know, 4-5 years ago, to just like, essentially how it happened was, he had come to Australia and one of my mates was like, hey, so-and-so's in town. And, you know, I was wondering if you could just like show them around Sydney a little bit. And I was like, yeah, look, you know what? Why not? Like, happy to, no worries. And it's interesting seeing how that could eventually turn out to be that. Such a huge
so
opportunity.
So meant to be.
Yeah.
So meant to be.
Which is really cool.
How has collaborating with Marshmallow changed the course of your career now?
I think like, I don't know, like, I don't really like boil everything down to one moment. I think that for me really solidified me in terms of, I mean, I guess in terms of the industry, it kind of shows people that it's like, okay, like, this is someone that we really need to watch. You know, she's really doing things. She's really getting after it. So on the one hand, that's been really awesome for me. That song in particular got a sync with Fortnite, which was really awesome. It kind of exposed me to a very different market and a very different world. You know, a lot of younger people, and then also like a lot more mainstream kind of side of things. So in that sense, it was really like, it kind of opened me up and opened my music up to like a whole different world of people. And also just kind of showed me, like, I don't know, for myself, it kind of put me in that, okay, like, you're now at this point, you know, because you watch yourself working every day from I can't even write a single track to I'm writing full EPs or I'm collaborating with Marshmallow or whatever it is. And so I think for me, I was like, this is a really cool milestone in terms of being like, okay, this is now where we're at.
Totally.
Yeah.
So big, and so big congratulations.
Thank you so much.
And you should honor that, and you should be excited for that, because that is a huge, huge milestone. I don't think there's many people, I mean, maybe my mum listening will be like, who's Marshmallow? She'll definitely Google it and start following. But it will just be more like, people our age, you know, in their 30s and under, would absolutely know who that is.
Yeah,
and that's
it's
a
pretty
huge,
wild.
Huge moment.
Yeah, yeah, it's really, it's pretty full on. And I'm hoping that will sort of continue in terms of I'm not trying to pigeonhole myself into just working with people that are in what I do.
What you do.
Yeah.
And you're playing some huge festivals, so like playing Red Rocks in the US, mm-hmm. and that is thousands and thousands and thousands of people
yeah.
in that audience. How on earth do you get up there and just go, I've got the confidence to just get up and headline and do this?
So the funny thing about that show is, so that was my first show in the US States. After COVID. And it was a really, I'd never been to a show there or anything, and it was really surreal because it's beautiful. Like, the actual venue is like this open air, natural rocks. It kind of looks like Pride Rock from The Lion King. Like, it's insane. Like, I kind of went out there and was like, wow. And obviously, naturally, I was very nervous about it. And I was 2 weeks from moving from Oz, which was really emotional and hard for me because I knew that I couldn't really go back for the foreseeable future. And I knew no one could come visit me and all that sort of stuff. And I was expecting not many people there, which is even harder when the venue's so big because it feels so much more empty.
You're like playing to ants.
Yeah, exactly. Like, wow. And then, I mean, sure enough, lots of people were already in the audience when I like started, and I just looked up and was like, wow, I cannot believe this. In terms of like getting up there and having the confidence to, like, there's part of it that's like, this is my job and it's something that I'm very confident in. I have plenty of practice and experience in it. So on that like side of things, you know, there is part of it that goes, okay, like, turn on in terms of work mode. But also, like, I have put in a lot of work and practice before that point. So whenever I get up for any show that I have to play, you know, I just go back to trust all of your experiences and all your training and practice until this point and just go in and enjoy it. To be honest, in the moment it's way easier because I feel like I don't have to think. I just, everything goes on autopilot and I just do what feels right in the moment. But the big thing about that show, which I was not expecting to happen at all, like, that was probably one of the most overwhelming shows for me that I've ever played. And there was a moment, the live stream from the show is actually on YouTube. And I watched back at it. I purposely went back to look at it because I was like, wow, this is kind of embarrassing and I hope like it's not too obvious. But about three quarters into my set, I had this moment where I play like an edit of Mr. Brightside into something else. And I started playing the song and I got up on top of the decks and was kind of like singing along. And I looked up at the rocks and was singing and saw all the people there. And I just started absolutely sobbing. Like, I just was so overwhelmed. It's like I had my whole career just kind of flash before. Like, I just kind of had this moment where I kind of thought about everything that happened in my career, all these times where I thought I was going to give up, all these times where, you know, these, say, for example, some amazing things that had happened and then some of these horrible things that happened to me, and realizing that there were relationships that didn't necessarily work out because of, you know, the fact that I was like moving around all the time, or like because I was going for something like this, or, you know, knowing I couldn't be with my family. All this stuff just overwhelmed me and I just started sobbing, like absolutely uncontrollably ugly crying sobbing. And I was like, oh my god, like it was almost like it was an incredible experience, as in I was like, it was kind of like happy and relief, but it also was like really overwhelming. And I didn't realize, but I had the mic in my hand and I bent over because I started crying. Then I bent over to like hide the cry kind of thing. But then you could hear me in the mic like sob. And I was like, oh, my God. Like, you know, and I knew the people there probably, like the front couple of rows could definitely see what was going on. I knew the other people probably couldn't. But, yeah, and then I was just like, oh, my God, and like pulled the mic away and like, could not stop smiling because it was just such an incredible moment. Like, I just was so overwhelmed with like emotion and feeling that I was like, wow, like that was like, I don't know, like a really crazy, overwhelming, enjoyable moment. But it's so hard to describe that feeling, and it's also like nothing beats it, and also nothing, it's really hard to get even back into that that headspace. It's such a foreign, crazy feeling that yeah, it's hard to kind of feel often, if that makes
That's
sense.
That's literally you stepping into, I've made it. This is me making it. This yeah. is what I've always wanted.
Yeah.
And people aspire to do these things all the time, no matter what industry you work in. And I feel like when you're finally there doing things and you just go, what is my life? I finally made it. This is it.
Yeah, it's really hard.
And that's where that emotion would have come from.
Yeah, it's really hard because I don't often say that I made it. Like right now I'm over here living in the US, like doing music full time. And I'm not in the mindset of, oh, I've made it. And I need to be in that more often. You know, sometimes I do need to tell myself that because, you know, you actually need to give yourself that kind of positive reinforcement. But in saying that, like, to get to the US took me years. It was so hard to get a visa. Visas are crazy expensive. I was going for them before and couldn't get them. And, you know, it was such a long journey to get to that process. And I think once I finally got up there and was there playing it, I just was like, oh, like it was like this huge like relief to be like, all of that heartache and hard work was worth it to get here. I just, that whole hour, I was just like loving, I was in my element and just like loving life.
I love that story. That's yeah. actually such a great story. And I think, you know, people would have just thought you were just really getting involved in the music. I mean, Mr. Brightside is a very emotional song.
It can be, yeah, it can be a very emotional song.
We've all been there. We've all sobbed during Mr. Brightside. We've all sobbed during Mr. Brightside because it's really an emotional, powerful song. But I'm actually curious. So at the time of recording, which is actually the day before release, lol, is that Travis Scott obviously has just done Astroworld.
Yeah.
And that is the most tragic thing to happen with all of those deaths in Astroworld. What do you think about what happened? Because there's a lot of criticism that he should have stopped the show once, and there's so much footage of people yelling for him to stop. Do you have an opinion on that at all?
I mean, it's what happened is horrific. Like it's so scary and sickening to think about, you know, to really think about how that happened for all of those people. I mean, on the one hand, I don't know enough about it and haven't looked into it enough. And in a purely selfish personal reason is because I actually don't feel at the moment I'm actually up for reading about that because it is horrific and traumatic. And as much as I want to be aware, I'm like, this is really heavy. But I mean, look, there's arguments for everything. From experience being up on stage as an artist, it is really hard to hear what anyone is communicating to you. Sorry, not hear, because sometimes you can hear people talking and yelling at you,
but
it's hard
understand.
To comprehend. Like I have photographers who literally tap me on the shoulder and whisper something or yell something in my ear. And sometimes it can take me a couple of minutes to really comprehend what they're talking about because I'm so in the moment of what I'm doing and performing. I'm so in that zone that I don't really, you know, it takes my brain a second to go out of that subconscious, this is me in motion to, oh, okay, that's what that person said. And I notice that often when people talk to me when I'm DJing, for example, I don't even react as extremely as I probably normally would because it's like I'm still trying to keep up what I'm doing. So on the one hand, I can understand how. And again, I don't know how obvious, you know,
down.
How it went down and how much communication there was because, I mean, if people are yelling from him from the crowd, there's no guarantees that he can hear or understand what they're saying.
Yeah,
you know, for
there
all
was
he
an
knows,
ambulance going through the crowd. And I think that that's where people are like, but there was an ambulance going through the crowd. Like you could see that something had happened.
Yeah, yeah.
But and, I get what you mean. If you're in the moment, you can't hear, you can't comprehend, you can't do all of that. There's so much at play here. And I think this is why I wanted to ask you as a performer, what would that be like?
And also, as horrible as this sounds, think about the amount of festivals that he would have played where there has been someone who's been taken away in an ambulance. You know, you see one of those and you might think, okay, like horrific and horrible, but has that happened? Or even the person, I know that someone passed out and he pointed it out and said, hey, there's someone here, you know, get them out. people do pass out at shows. As horrible
they're
as
on
that.
Things.
They're on things. It's hot. They haven't drunk enough water. Any other, you know, just by chance something has happened to them that day. But in saying that, I mean, it's unfortunate that everything has. I feel like there's been a lot of heat on him. The thing is, when you're a performer and an artist, your job is to write music, perform at your best, you know, like that is your part of the job. And you hire people, well, you don't even hire people, technically the promoters do all this sort of stuff, but you have people who are meant to be in charge of all of this safety, making sure that nothing bad happens, making sure that if something bad does happen, they make the right decision to shut everything down or to change things, to move people around, to do whatever they need to do. Really, someone, whoever was the head, and I don't know what everyone's role is, but the head of safety should have come on stage and said, hey, you need to stop, you know. And as much as it's like, oh, it's all on him, as an artist, he's not an expert in any of this, in
these
fields.
He's literally just there to perform.
He's there to sing a song that he wrote. And of course like, if he knew this was happening, there's no way he's going to be like, let them die, you know, like it's really. And I'm not saying that he's completely in the right, but I think people need to be more understanding of how big this operation is. You know, this guy isn't standing in front of 50 people in a small room. Like, there are so many people there. There are so
There's
many
50,000, yeah.
Exactly. And I think it's the responsibility of the people who are running the event to be on top of all of that. You know, they really need to have someone there going, okay, this is out of control. You know, there is a part of it that is not unavoidable, but is a bit of a perfect storm for a disaster, because when you've got that many people packed in, you can't know what's happening in the middle of the crowd until the word finally spreads to you. But I think, you know, the safety contingency plan there was not well organized and was not well executed. It definitely should not have gotten to that point. And I don't know, I do feel for him that it's all kind of fallen on his shoulders.
Blown up in his, yeah.
Because as an artist, like, you don't specialize in that stuff. And as much as, you know, there is always so much weight put on people who are, you know, like, how do I put, like, on artists, for example, you know, all the pressure's gone on him, which I understand, but at the same time, it's like, well, how much could he have known? Yes, he did have the full power to stop the show. I'm not saying that he can't just say, hey, guys, we're stopping the show.
Yeah.
But the amount of information that he got, or the amount of understanding that he got, you know, I think that is the level that needed to be more efficient. You know, the people in charge of safety, in charge of the event, in charge of the running of the day needed to go up to him and be like, hey, we're in a crisis right now. Even if the crisis was, hey, we need half an hour to stop the music and, you know, sort everything out. You know, there are so many ways that it could have been handled instead of just, like, let the show go on.
The show must go on.
Nothing happened.
I think the tragic thing about it is that there's eight people, and not to bring this whole thing down, but it's just, it is scary that there's eight people lost their lives because of those mistakes, and that's why they've been sued $1 million.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's very, it's very concerning, and you know, as much as it's not his fault, and I completely understand there's a big workings around it, I think from someone, you know, in the general public who are watching this, you just can't comprehend how this couldn't be prevented.
Yeah, exactly right. And I think, to be honest, like, more needs to be put into more definitely needs to be put into how it's run and how it's handled. It should have happened before this. And it's sad that moments like this teaches people enough of a lesson for them to do something about it. And I hate that, because the people who, you know, did lose their lives, they're innocent people who are going to enjoy, you know, who are going to enjoy a concert. And it's really heartbreaking to hear that, and also to hear that it couldn't really be solved within, you know, the confines of people around these people. You know, like, everyone was pretty helpless in that scenario, which is really heartbreaking as well. You know, imagine being there next to someone, seeing them struggling and not being able to do anything about it.
And call out for help and no one can hear you.
Exactly. Yeah. It's really, it's a really horrific thing to think about. There are plenty of shows with lots and lots of people that, you know, it's not like this is the biggest show that's ever happened.
No, I mean Ariana Grande, you know, Manchester.
Yeah, like there's definitely a lot of shows where there's big, you know, there's a lot of people, and that obviously does come with big risk. It's also interesting seeing how it's handled, you know, country to country. You know, like some countries seem to have less tolerance for certain things that happen at these big events than others. Like I know in Oz, for example, we've had shows where, you know, one death is enough to shut down that,
to shut down the entire
that festival for good, ever. You know? So, yeah. Which I think is important because, you know, human life is important. You can't just be like, oh, well, like, these people died and that's unfortunate. It's like, no, this is a really, you know, this is something that we need to, in this day and age, especially, this is something that, first of all, should never have happened in the first place. And second of all, we need to make sure it's never going to happen again.
We are very lucky in Australia. I mean,
we are very
gun laws, all of that. It's we're very lucky that they do kind of go, okay, well, this happened. Let's stop it now.
Let's learn from it. Yeah.
Let's learn from it.
It is really, I mean, I do feel very grateful to have grown up in Oz. It was obviously very safe. There are definitely some negatives to it. You know, I think a lot of music events were shut down pretty harshly without, you know, like sometimes there is the whole side of things where it's like, okay, you've just shut this down so that it can't happen again, instead of actually working out a way in which we can do this safely. I think that...
Is that the case with Stereo? What happened with Stereo?
Was it Stereo? I can't remember. It was one of the festivals.
Or Homebake maybe?
No,
I think Stereo it was... I feel like it might have been Stereo.
One of those. But yeah, essentially I think someone... And again, like, do not quote me. I'm sure this is not accurate, overly accurate information, but you will see, I have seen it at a couple of shows that are a bit smaller than that. And one person will OD, which is horrible to hear and think, but, you know, their suggestion is let's just shut down this festival. Mm. And there goes a whole heap of jobs. There goes, you know, like, speaking as a musician, you're cutting our opportunities to earn money. People... It changes the culture for people because they go, oh, well, we can't safely have fun. You know what I mean? And I mean, that's a whole another issue in itself. I think they also did shut down some opportunities to create a safe environment for people at those shows. Like, you know, having things like drug testing, like to me, that's a no brainer. People are not going to get their drugs tested and be told, oh, there's something that could kill you in here and still take it. You know, that's, and that's something that I don't think that's going to encourage more people, more or less people, to take it. I think it's just going to stop the amount of fatalities that happen from...
Which is all we want, really.
Exactly. But, yeah, I think honestly a tragic situation that happened. And whilst I, you know, I do understand that, yes, I think that Travis should have stopped the show, no doubt. It's just hard to really...
We just don't know the circumstances.
I don't know exactly. You know, there's people yelling at him from the crowd, and I have seen that video. From experience being up on stage, and my stages are nowhere near the size of his, you can't really necessarily make out what they're chanting. You know, that he could have thought that was a chant of, like, a song that they wanted to hear, or like, I mean, I know it's hard for me to say that because people will be like, what's the video, and hear what they're saying. But it's like, you're in the middle of playing in front of hundreds of thousands of people. You're thinking about a million things at once. You're hearing people chanting. You're not necessarily sitting there and really reacting and hearing what they're saying. So it's hard to shut him down completely. And whilst, yes, he needs, like, there is some responsibility that is placed on him, I think there's like deeper responsibility in the safety of running events.
Totally. And they should, that's hopefully something that they look at and go, well, this is how we can do this better.
You never want that to happen again. You never want that to happen again.
And he would never want that to happen again.
No artist wants that, you know? No. Like, there's no one that's like, oh, that's just bad luck, you know? It's not bad luck. It's horrific.
No, and it's horrific, and it feels like my fault. You know, we don't know what's going on in Travis's mind right now. He's probably like, this is my fault.
Or, exactly.
You know, Kylie's so pregnant, and she's, you know, she got slammed for posting on social media. I highly doubt a 24-year-old, yeah, okay, she's young, but I highly doubt that somebody like her would post people dying on social media. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I feel like that's completely unfair. Mm. And I'm really glad that we spoke about this, because this is something that I was really keen to talk to you about, in terms of, as a performer, how on earth could this happen? But also, we shouldn't be so quick to cancel people when it's ultimately the fault of the organisers, or the fault of the safety crew, or it just wasn't well thought out or well planned.
Exactly.
And like, hopefully it just won't happen again.
Exactly. I mean, I think it's so, everyone is also in shock too, and everyone wants someone to blame. And it's so easy to blame that person that's right at the top there, because that's why everyone's gathered. But in saying that, like, again, like, everyone has their role and responsibility. And it's like, yes, people are trained in certain things, or people have been in that environment so many times, but how we...
Blaming doesn't help anybody. Just fix the problem.
Yes,
there's
exactly.
obviously an issue. Fix the problem.
Yeah.
So, and it is, it's the most tragic thing. And so in terms of the industry, I mean, we've spoke about a lot of the positives. We've spoken about a lot of the negatives. Is there anything that you would love to see changed about the industry at large that you work in?
I mean there's definitely a couple of things that I would like to see change. I think there's one side of things I'd love to see change is prioritizing artists' health, physical but mostly mental as well. I think that gets pushed by the wayside a lot, and you see people crash and burn, and it's it usually like becomes a responsibility of the individual to stay on top of that, which I totally understand. But I kind of want that to be more in the foresight of people's mind and the community in general, because it's super important for, and especially like for a career, it's super important in terms of the longevity. I think the other thing that's super big is just the whole, the dynamic with females in the industry. And whilst I feel like it's changed even since I've been in the industry, there's definitely like a long way for it to go. I know a huge thing that's really big with people in music, they're all about equal representation. You know, we need to have more women on lineups and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, quite often it does force promoters to stack lineups with more women, and sometimes you can see they're doing it out of, you know, fear of being cancelled and all that stuff. Not that I'm saying that's a bad thing, because there are definitely a lot of women who definitely deserve to be on lineups that get overlooked. But I think, and I don't know if this is controversial and I don't really talk about it often, but I think some people are looking they're going about fixing this in the wrong way. I don't think that, you know, I think women who do well in music and who are writing music and all that, I think the ones who work hard and continue to pursue this career, like, I think they do eventually get opportunities to be on the big stage. I think where it lacks is the steps before that. I think there are so many barriers to women kind of getting to that point that, you know, they get to a point where they can't do it anymore. I don't think there's a lot of support, opportunity, you know, and encouragement for women in their starting days of their career to continue. I think the better place to put that energy is creating opportunities for women in terms of, you know, upping their skills, or like, you know, let's allow them, like, say for example, I did this writing camp with KLP, and it was for women and non-binary artists, and essentially created this whole opportunity for all of us to collaborate together, which I often didn't found I had the opportunity for, because it was usually men who assumed that I didn't know how to produce very well, or that I would be, you know, that I would be sort of the spare change that they had to kind of carry along. Whereas really I can sit in a room and produce for anyone in any genre within a day, you know?
Yeah.
And I think having that, also having that writing camp allowed me to have the confidence to be like, cool, I can do this. And I can call up other producers and work with them. And, you know, little things like that are super important. Creating an opportunity for women to really like get into honing their skills and encourage them to continue. Even, you know, having a music production school and really pushing and enabling women to apply and get into it, I think that will make a big change. Because once you have more women start, you know, it's almost like saying we only have 10% of women trying to produce music, but we're trying to get 50% of the lineup to be women. You can't really expect 20% to convert into 50%. You need to really start it at the beginning. So I think I would love to see that prioritized and see people sort of put more focus on that side of things. And then the other thing in terms of my career that, or like my industry that I'd like to see change is in terms of, I guess, talking about more the financial gain, it's actually really hard for artists to make music. It's really hard for artists to make money. A lot of the ways that we could make money have been sort of diminished, or our percentages have been taken down. You know, quite often I'll release a track and I'm only going to get 25% of the royalties from that track, sometimes even less. You know, sometimes if it's with majors, you know, I remember signing a track or a remix to a major and my fee was $1, you know, like you don't get any of the royalties. You don't get, you know, a lot of the time, like so many other people have their hands on it. And I think that is something that I'd love to see change. You know, we make music from, you'll see artists who are constantly, and yes, on the one hand, they like it, like they enjoy it. But on the other hand, quite often it's because they need to make money. You know, even when it comes to making merch, a lot of artists do a lot of merch because they know they can make money from that perspective. But even so, you know, they're giving a certain percentage to, you know, there's a whole part of it that's the distribution and making it. But then there's also, you know, you're paying a percentage to your management. If you're in a venue, you have to pay the venue a commission or a fee in order to sell your merch at their venue. You know, so it is often like quite difficult to make money. And you'll see some artists who have millions of streams on Spotify, and that the money that they're making from that can't pay their rent. You know what I mean? I don't know, it's definitely quite difficult in terms of, you know, getting the money directly to artists. Not saying that, you know, that obviously management take a fee because they are doing work and all of that sort of stuff. I'm not saying that people shouldn't be paid for what they do, but there's definitely, I don't think people necessarily see how, you know, that side of things. And they assume, oh, well, this person has this many followers or this many people coming to their show, so they must be raking it in and making all this money. But I don't really think that's the reality of the situation.
Well, this has been the most enlightening chat. Honestly, I didn't know so much about this. And I think that having you come on and tell us all of these things, I think it's so important to talk about.
Yeah, I think it's hard because I feel like also some of it is so, I feel like I've been speaking really negatively the whole time. But obviously,
not at all.
This career is incredible. Like I just think it's more obvious to people why it's amazing and why it's incredible.
I agree.
It's just people don't really see.
Yeah,
I just don't think that people see the other sides of it and the ins and outs. And it is really quite a mystery for people who aren't involved in it. You know, even my parents like ask me all these questions, and I realize that they have no idea. Like they don't see any of that sort of stuff. So it's, you know, it's obviously like an incredible, you know, I love being able to connect with people all over the world. I love being able to like help people, and like, I don't know, when people tell me like, oh, your music, I listen to your music every day in the gym, or like I was feeling like this and then I listened to your music and now I feel great, like hearing things like that to me is obviously absolutely incredible. But that's obviously the great stuff that most people can probably easily understand or easily see. But people don't often see like the ins and outs and the back end of all of that.
And I think it's just important to talk about. So thank you so much for coming on The Good Chat, honestly. It's been so much fun.
Thank you for having me.
Well, that was such a great chat. On next week's episode, I chat to the Belay brothers, the drag powerhouse duo who have their very own series called Dragula on Shudder. You're not going to want to miss it.
And if you like this chat, you can rate, follow and review and follow me on Instagram at AnitaAnnabelle_ and at The Good Chat Pod. See you next week.
This episode of The Good Chat contains references to sexual assault, mental health, and drug addiction. If you or anyone you know needs help, contact Lifeline on 131114 or the Sexual Assault and Domestic Violence National Helpline on 1800 RESPECT.